Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 165.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 3, episode 17, Enemies, and 18, Earshots. My name is Selena. I am back after missing Doppelgangland last week. Oh, guys, I'm never going to be over that. And I have superfan Caitlin with me and newbies Mitch and Kristen. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Good morning or night, wherever you are in the world. It always seems to be us. Like, sometimes Brittany's mixed in there, but otherwise this is pretty much who I talk Buffy with, which is
we're literally day and night. Fun. That's funny.
Yeah. So before we get into the discussion this week, we just want to remind you of the contact information. As always, if you want to send us spoiler-free thoughts, and please do keep them spoiler-free, you can do that. You know, spoilers are a big deal, I hear, so you should definitely listen to that one. You can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Before we get into for some reason, the sentence that I was about to come out of my mouth was, before we get into talking about earmuffs, that's not right, enemies, we are going to do fun facts to help you guys distinguish our voices. Let's start with Kristen this week.
My fun fact is that in approximately 6 hours, I get my roommate back for 2 whole days. Yay. I'm very excited. I haven't seen Karen in like 3 weeks, and it's very, very sad. So I'm glad I get to go pick her up from the airport, and she'll be here for a couple days before she leaves for Indie Pop. So I'm just looking forward to having her around for a couple of days.
What a vagabond Karen can be. I feel like she is just this traveler that like goes more places than I know in any of my other friends to go. It's amazing. She like does not stop.
She's just a traveling fool for the next like month and a half, because she'll be after Indie Pop, she'll be back for like 2 weeks, and then we leave for SDCC 2 or 3 weeks, and then we leave for them. So it's crazy. Yeah, she's basically like gone most of the summer. Just craziness.
Which means more Selena on the podcast.
Exactly.
I know. God, who needs that? But I'm glad that you're missing her, though, as opposed to being like, oh, damn it, she's coming back. I just want the house to myself all the time. That's the sign of a good roommate situation.
Yeah, I mean, being alone has its perks every so often. You're like, oh, yes, like, I get the whole run of the place. But after about 2 days, it's like, okay, I really just want my roommate back.
Oh.
It starts to get kind of boring and lonely.
And Mitch, what is your fun fact?
My fun fact is that I did a really cool design in my new apartment that I painted, and I spent a long time making it, and then I realized that I needed to do a second coat, which is impossible when you do a really cool design, because I'm using the negative space that's not painted, and I had to take off the tape immediately. So I would highly suggest that if you are doing a fun design, get tape that you can keep on for said fun design while you're painting, because that negative space is important for a second coat. And now I'm stuck with a really weird paint job that I think I'm just going to cover it all up with a new color.
Oh, no. You should take pictures and show us.
Yeah. I have a picture. I'll send it to Rewatchable, the Twitter account, so you guys can see my hard work on this. I didn't think I actually sent pictures the last time I painted my apartment, because I told Rewatchable I would, so sorry about that. I can send pictures of both from the last one that looked really cool, and this one, which unfortunately doesn't, because it's kind of like a lighter green color than I wanted, because Walmart does not know how to mix them, and it didn't like to stay on one coat like my first apartment had, so that's unfortunate. If anything, I think it was a difference in brands. Just don't go with Glidden. Go with Colorplace, guys, if you can. I didn't have a choice because it was all that was available. But Colorplace seems to be the one to go with to avoid having to do a second coat. Because, my God, is it a big deal trying to paint an apartment?
Okay, well, that sounds fun, but also frustrating. We should just start making them frustrating facts instead.
Frustrating facts.
So, Caitlin, do you have an either fun or frustrating fact for us?
I can go down the frustrating route because I started a new summer job that it has sucked my soul, basically, which is appropriate for this episode.
Very appropriate, yeah.
I started a job where I'm teaching reading to different age groups, from like kindergartners up through adults. And they send me places that I'm driving like an hour and a half each way sometimes. And then I'm there for like, the classes are between an hour and 15 minutes for the young kids to 2.5 hours for the adults. And then I get like 3 of them back to back. And then I come home and want to just sleep, but then I have to do all my work for the next day, and then I'm still teaching college. So I have no life, but my bank account's going to be really happy at the end of the summer.
Oh, gosh.
So that's my frustrating fact. I have no life.
That's a frustrating fact.
And it looks like you had to catch up on like 6 Buffy episodes because you started with a gingerbread, so that's a lot.
Yeah, because I've been so busy with training for my job and starting it that I haven't been on in like 3 or 4 weeks. So I had to watch all of them. So I watched 5 yesterday and 3 this morning.
Oh, wow. So that's
That's commitment. Because especially because we're super fans. Like in theory, we could skip, you know, the weeks we're not on. But like, you don't want to do that. You want to do a complete rewatch.
Wait, Amy has been a rat for 8 episodes now. That's Gingerbread. 8 episodes back now.
Guess so.
Wow. I've missed that character for a lot. I mean, I feel like if I was watching it live, I would have been a lot more frustrated. See, I agree with Adiana. I feel like Amy's going to come back for the finale because they're, like, building it up for such a long time now. And, like, Anya and Amy and Willow and maybe that emo boy are all going to come back and, like, have some special witch powers against the mayor. That would be fun.
That would be fun. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see for that one. You save it for your Mitch's wild theory at the end or whatever we decided last time.
But definitely, the names for this one do not relate to anything with Amy being a rat, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, my fun fact, I guess I finally have one, is that I got to see some Hypeville people and some, you know, Harry Potter people and stuff like that in London this week. Went to see Cursed Child with the gang, and I got to meet Danya for the first time, and I got to see Andrew and Kyle again, and I got to meet Katie for the first time, and Richard, and who am I forgetting? Oh, Christina was there. It was a lot of fun. It was really just always really nice to see people from the site in real life. Because I so rarely get to do that. None of them are my roommates, so I have to take my real FaceTime where I can. And I think by the end of it, they probably had enough FaceTime with me because we met up, me and Kyle and Christina met up at a cafe. And then after like 5 minutes, we were just sitting there and they both took out their phones and they started just on their phones. And I was like, excuse me. Like, this is, you know, you can be on your phone anytime.
I think Kyle has one of those privacy screens too, doesn't he?
No, actually, he didn't.
He had one of those because it felt like double uninclusive. It's like, you're just not only going to be on your phone, but I'm not allowed to see it at all.
Yeah, I definitely peeked at a Grindr conversation at one point.
I'm sure you did.
No. not on purpose. But yeah, no, so it was just a lot of fun seeing it with everyone and getting to experience Cursed Child and all that exciting stuff that has been going on.
Now, is Hype Podcast or Mugglecast, which one is going to do, I mean, are either going to do a spoiler-y review of Cursed Child so that people can tune in, maybe they're hearing you on here?
Mitch, we would never do that.
Spoilers? So no, you're not, crazy? That's the thing, like, I don't know, it's like, we're in such a weird middle ground now, after J.K. Rowling called us out, so it's like...
Oh my gosh, well, you know what? At this point, though, we might as well, you know, just own it, right? So, actually, Hype is definitely going to do a spoiler-free review because we've already set that up. Right. And Mugglecast is going to do one or both. And one of us is going to do a spoiler-full review.
We'll be two different casts, as in, like, will you be on both Hype and Mugglecast? For both spoiler-free or, like, I don't know. How are you guys going to switch it up?
Well, see, that's the thing we don't know yet because there's actually, I mean, what was it, like, 7 or 8 people, 5 or 6? I don't even know how many of us went, but definitely, like, not more than we should be able to all fit on one podcast. And probably the Hype one will just be me, Danya, and Kyle because we're trying to put it together really quickly. So it's, like, availability and stuff. We won't both do spoiler ones, because that seems just pushing it a little too much. But we do want to
maybe like Andrew, obviously. Maybe.
Well, yeah, like it'd probably be because we do want to do a spoiler one, because basically all the spoilers are already on Tumblr, and people are discussing them extremely like freely. And we also want to do a post like while it's all still fresh in our minds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in that, and we sort of want to do it like, well, listen to this if you've already seen the play, kind of thing. But we'll see. We haven't really decided yet, but for sure, we want to do something for the people that actually want to know.
It's going to be fun listening to some of like our old rewatchable buddies, because Danya had been on for Cora and Atla, and Kyle was for Pushing Daisies and Firefly. So it's kind of like, I feel like Rewatchable is the meeting ground for all things Cursed Child right now. It makes me really happy.
Well, you know, J.K. Rowling did steal the plot of Harry Potter from Buffy, so
oh, God, it all comes back around.
Oh, boy.
Woo.
Yeah, well, until I uncover that conspiracy theory, we'll just keep plugging away here. But yeah, no, definitely check Hype and MuggleCast for news about those podcasts, because we know that you guys all want to know, and we definitely, contrary to popular belief, we definitely don't want to force any spoilers on you, so we will be labeling everything very clearly, and the spoilers are out there if you want to know, but I would personally recommend that you wait till the script book comes out, because anything out of context is probably going to seem a little weird. So that's my official recommendation to all of you listeners here.
I appreciate that. As an unspoiled hopeful, I appreciate that.
I hope you guys manage to avoid the spoilers, because like they're already being shared around so freely. I have no idea how you guys are gonna, like, it seems so impossible that it's, you know, the internet's gonna stay spoiler free, but we can only hope that people continue to hide them under spoiler tags and stuff like that. Well, but we'll have to wait and see what
happens. You would think that such a big publication like Time would do that, but they didn't. They wrote just like an article saying like, there's this thing called Cursed Child, and it is out. But they like put not like a blatant spoiler, but something that definitely, if you're in the know of Harry Potter, it would be. I won't mention anything about what it is right now, but just avoid that Time article, guys, because it led me on a rabbit hole. And one of said watchable Cursed Child viewers, I went to them and I asked them to confirm the spoiler, so they told me everything I wanted to know. Because I was like, I mean, I feel like I'm done once I learned this one thing. So I'll tell you guys off air who it was and what it was that spoiled me. But please,
I don't think they
want to
know. Oh, right.
Don't
okay.
Tell me.
I thought you were going to tell them.
No, I won't say anything. No,
me.
Keep the secrets.
I haven't even read Hypeable's articles, and I know what they were about, and I still haven't read them because I don't want to know anything.
No, I won't say anything about even what that half spoiler was that Time did. So that was really upsetting, because honestly, that was more Wormtail-y than anything Hypeable did. God, that was so annoying. It all was downhill. Like, there was no way of coming back from that. Ugh.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear that.
It'll kill you when you hear what it was, too. Because you'll be like, you were almost there, too. Like, ugh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry to tease all the listeners. I just don't want to spoil everyone else with that. If you want to just message me or something, I'll tell you guys, too. That's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No spoilers where you don't want them. Don't worry about
only
it.
Only PMs. Only PMs.
Yes. So let us get into talking about Buffy. We've been talking about Harry Potter too long. I know they overlap, but let's try to stay on track here with Enemies, which is a great episode, a great twist, a great return of Angelus and Faith and all that stuff. So we're going to read the short synopsis, and then we're going to get into talking about what happened. So in this episode, Angelus comes back, but he actually doesn't. When Faith attempts to turn Angel back into a vicious monster, she's duped by Giles's good old Blue Man Group friend into thinking that it worked. Faith reveals all of the mayor's evil plans for the Books of Ascension, and once she learns that she was bamboozled, she runs off to her sugar daddy, Swanky Diggs. Pretty much what happened. So, Faith is evil now. How do we feel about that? What about you, Mitch?
See, here's the funny part. I remember in the last episode of Rewatchable, someone commented saying, I like Mitch's conversation about Buffy and Faith. And I can't remember, because Selena, you were on there with me. Remind me what I said, because I don't remember Like, I must have said something really prolific and hair toss. I'll just take all the credit for that. But I don't really remember because I just, as far as I'm here right now, I don't know if I have anything prolific to match to that standard, but I still do appreciate Faith and I don't hate her, much like other rewatchable hosts that are newbies. I think Adiana was like, that she sees how she got to the point that she's at. I do, but I also think it's sad the path she's going on. It makes me depressed because it makes me feel like there's no coming back for what Faith is doing. That, like, and also, of course, my ship Fuffy. It's tough. I mean, she's like standing by her bay, kind of like your Bucky. It feels a bit like that to me, and that's cool. Mm-hmm. I can get behind that. But it comes to the point where you just have to let Bucky go, and she has to let Faith go. There's nothing left. Faith is murdering, like, goat demon men when they're just being kind, and whatever. It was a sad, sad thing to see. I hope she comes back. I don't know how she would. The show does seem to do big flips on, like, characters like Spike or even Angel or Angelus, you know, where, and that's a whole different can of worms, I know. But, like, let's stick on Spike. He was evil, 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 and then he came over into Buffy's house. She invited him in, and which I still think was stupid, and, you know, introduced her to her mom and all that, and they kind of worked together. They had a fight, and it's weird because good and bad mix together so strangely on the show, because then he takes Willow and Xander hostage, and it was such a strange beat that they still wanted to use him to get to them, but they were going to be kind in doing it. They didn't exactly... they were kind of like... They were a bit cutting, like, you pathetic thing. They weren't like, give me back my friend. Like, they... There's a really weird line that this show skirts with good and bad characters that will betray them, and then they just still have them back. It makes me wonder why. Like, why does Buffy bother to even keep Faith in her good graces at all anymore? Why would she even care?
But that's the, like, I think it's such an interesting point, and Caitlin, you can definitely speak to this too, that is the point of Buffy that you're sort of identifying here. It is always going to be the line between good and evil. What does it mean to be good? What does it mean to be evil? Can I, you know, like, Spike is evil, like, categorically evil. He's soulless, but he can still be funny. He can still joke around with Buffy's mom. You know, he can still be an ally to her, and she can tolerate that because, you know, at that point in time, it's like literally the lesser of two evils. And someone like Faith, categorically a good guy, except she's not. So how do you reconcile that with this whole, because they, you know, Buffy started off by saying vampires are evil, people are good. And ever since then, it's done everything it could to blur the lines of that. And also we saw in this episode, you know, there was a demon that was not a bad guy. And a slayer killed it, or him. You know, and then you're sort of left, well, what is good and what is evil anymore? There's no clear lines of that.
Well, I liked that. Do you want to add something? I like that they introduced the good, quote-unquote, good demon when, and I don't know how to reference him, but Rune from Gilmore Girls, the guy who found Angel or Angelus at that point, no, Angel, sucking rat blood in the street, that guy, he was our first, like, decent demon, and he came back in, what's the finale for season two? What are those two episodes
Becoming.
Called? Becoming, yeah.
Becoming.
And this character felt a lot like that because can we call him goat demon? I don't really know. He was just...
Sure.
yeah. He felt in the same vein as that. And I appreciated seeing that character in terms of that isn't skirting the good and evil. That is just straight up people assume you're evil because of what you're categorized as. Like, you are this type of person, therefore you are evil. But then I'm also asking myself now, does demon quantify no soul? Does that mean automatically you cannot feel? Or can, I mean, and this is the questions I know you're going to say, Selena, I should be asking, right? Like, Spike and Drusilla seem to love each other. That was feeling, even though we're told that souls can't feel. That without a soul, you can't feel. So I'm interested to see where that goes in terms of demons, but in terms of Faith, I'm almost... See, the thing is, it's weird, because I see her arc going more toward her becoming a monster completely, like the mayor deciding that he wants her to become a soup somehow, even more than she already is. Supernatural soup. Oh.
Yes, soup. I want to be carrot and ginger soup today.
I feel like he's leading around the path to say, well, you're already a really strong slayer. Let's double your power by making you a vampire or something. I don't know, making you even more invincible or whatever. Which would be interesting. Or maybe he'll find a different kind of demon that doesn't have the fall downs of holy water, crosses, and stakes, and wood, I guess, for that matter. So I'm interested to see where the mayor's going to take this, because she's in a really impressionable time. And to take Faith and bring her in a desperate measure to someone who is power-hungry and abusive makes me scared for this character. I hope she sticks around in the show. I don't know if she does. I have no clue her arc, which is good. I'm unspoiled on her. If I was spoiled, I think I would have ruined my speculation, but right now I'm still under the impression that she could die in the season finale, and then that would be her arc, too. She either becomes a demon or dies, is my current prediction here.
Okay. Caitlin, what do you think about this whole good versus evil thing?
I mean, I agree with what you were saying, that the whole point here is that we're supposed to be looking at the gray areas, and there is... We have that whole thing where Buffy asks Giles to lie to her, and he gives her the whole fairy tale thing of we can always see who's good and who's bad, and the good guys always win. And, you know, she says liar. And that's the whole point of the exploration here, is that we're looking at humanity through the lens of having supernatural entities. And that's kind of the whole point. And it's, I think that's why this genre can be so interesting, is that you can use these inhuman beings to really explore ideals and characteristics of humanity. And we see it both in the demons themselves. We see them in the humans. And Faith is such a good exploration of this, because she seems like she should be on the good side, but her arc makes total logical sense as you watch it play out, and it's just kind of fascinating. And then you always still remember she's so young, mm-hmm. and that it's kind of heartbreaking to see how she's jerked around with everything. So it's just, is she going too far that she can ever be pulled back? She's very young, but she's made some decisions and done some things that many would say you cannot come back from, like murder. So,
right. That tiny thing.
So, yeah, just the small little detail there. So, I don't know. I just think it's so fascinating. And that's one of my favorite things about Buffy. And Faith really exemplifies it in a lot of ways, I think.
Agreed. Do you have any thoughts on Faith and what she went through this episode, Kristen?
I just love this whole thing, like basically pitting the Slayers against each other, and like seeing that just how wrong things could have gone for Buffy if, you know, if X, Y, and Z hadn't worked out in her favor, if she hadn't had Giles as an influence, and like seeing how far a Slayer can go wrong is really, really interesting, because you just can't see Buffy going that far dark. Like, you just can't imagine it. So I'm really enjoying seeing this whole thing play out. You know, Faith, I feel bad, and I like her as a character, and I hate the thing she's doing, but, you know, it's a really, really interesting story.
I think I feel the same. I feel bad for her, and the older I get when I watch the show, the more bad for her I feel. Because I think when you watch this as a young kid, you're like, oh, she's the bad Slayer, Buffy's the good Slayer, you know? Whereas now it's like all the little nuances of her pain becomes so much more apparent, that when you see her do something like this, and especially when you've seen over the past few episodes, there have been moments when she has been so close to getting the support that she needed, you know, from Buffy and from Giles and from Angel as well. And, you know, that obviously the thing where Wesley came in and ruined it was the big moment. And I just, it makes me really sad for her. That said, though, I mean, she picked a side now. She's picked the mayor's side, and we're definitely seeing the effects of that. And I want to ask you guys, especially the newbies, obviously, if you thought that Angel was evil again. Because that's, like, the big thing of this episode.
Yes. I yes. can straight up say I thought he was Angelus, and it mm-hmm. freaked me out, and I was not okay. As much as it's awesome, because I love seeing him as Angelus, I was like, no, 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 and my brain started freaking out, like, how are they going to get him back? Like, how is, you know, it was such a pain in the ass trying to figure out a way last time. Like, yeah, no, I totally bought into it. I totally thought he was Angelus.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I did too.
You forgot?
Every time I saw this, I forget it. Not this time, but every, you know, a bunch of times I've watched it, I've been like, I know there's a twist here, but I can't remember how they get out of it. You know, it's really well done.
Well,
what were we gonna say, Mitch?
No, yeah, I agree that it felt real, and I was excited for Brittany because it's fun. I like watching TV shows with Brittany because she tends to get really fanatic about specific things, and when those specific things come back. Like Boomy as like a second iteration in Korra, or Angelus perhaps coming back for the show Angel. I don't know. That I thought this was the moment that we were going to have Angel, but it should have been. I mean, I would have been upset though, because I would have been like, why didn't they name the show Angelus? Alas, I'm still under the impression that he will leave Sunnydale amicably. I don't know where he's going to go. Maybe he'll go live in the sewers underground. But I still don't know where the show Angel is going to take place, because that's coming up, guys. That's 4 episodes.
I know. You can
technically
wait.
technically like 3 episodes, because we're having like a 2-parter again for the finale. So it's, you know, like, I guess you can call that 3 quote-unquote days in the Buffyverse. So I have been waiting. And I do like that the listeners are like eagerly anticipating my final reaction to it, because I am too, because I don't know what it's going to be.
At this point, I said this before on the show, you're going to hate it because you've built it up so much in your head. Like, Angel of the Series is like this beacon of light, you know?
See, what I want to know is, I don't really know too much about it promotionally, but I want to know if Spike's going to be in it. Because he's like mysteriously not in the show right now, when he was very in Drusilla. They were very introduced, and they were very close to Angel, so I feel like that they're not going to make me disappointed, because I really do like that threesome dynamic, the literal threesome dynamic of those three people. I feel like that's going to be, if anything, the most interesting part. But I don't know, like, I still haven't made up my mind if he's Angel or Angelus in that show, because if he's good.
Well, you don't have to, because you'll have to wait and see. But for now, we can pretty much lock you down for your Angel / Angelus and Spike and Drusilla are going to live in the sewers in the alternate reality.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's as far as your predictions have gone.
Well, yes, that is.
And I'm excited to see that show.
And I asked myself, yeah, that'd be fun. I asked myself if it would be a more interesting show. I know Brittany's answer here, but if it'd be a more interesting show seeing him as Angel or Angelus, because I find them both interesting. I know that Brittany finds Angel boring as all hell, the character, but I find him to still be like dreamy. Like, after all these years, the show has aired like, what, oh my god, like 20 years ago now. Which is weird to say, but that's true, isn't it? Has it been 20 years? 98, 97?
Since
what? This episode, even. I think Buffy started in 96.
Oh, no, it's like 15 years, something.
Wow. So, I mean, he still holds up in terms of dreamboatness.
10 years.
So I really like him when he's, like, all, like... I was going to compare him to Edward Cullen. I stopped myself. I like it when he's, he kind of feels like very Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic, in terms of he has that kind of like deep artistic side to him. Not like the whole on the King of the World thing, but I really find him attractive, Angel. The actor playing him is obviously very pretty, but I'm talking about personality-wise. So seeing him come back as Angelus was sad, but it was also fun, because then we started to see a really dark storyline go on, and the show was going there. Buffy was tied up in chains, and he was going to watch on as she had various appendages clipped off by a very fucked-up Faith. Which, can we talk about that, guys? Because what the actual fuck? I do not get how this was just such a thing that she was ready to do. That was such a leap. She never had been... She was just so upset that she'd killed this goat man in this episode itself. And then she wants to go ahead and, like, use torture devices on Buffy, which made me think, like, is this just meant to be not, like, evil, but, like, a kink of hers? That she likes this? Like, the movie Hostel? Once again, Selena, that movie. Like, I don't know what's going on here. It was just so, like, lax and chill that she was doing this. Like, she was just like, yes, here we go. I like it when you scream, Buffy. And I was like, this is not the Buffy fanfic that I want to come true. Leave this alone. It was bad.
What do you think about this, Caitlin?
I don't even know where to start with what Mitch just said. But okay.
I think I just go off the last bit of it.
The first thing that came to mind was just, was Faith really that upset from killing the goat demon? Because when she went to Angel, she was faking. Like, mm-hmm. She tells the mayor, like, that was part of her plot to get him to lose his soul. So I don't know that she was actually as upset as maybe we think she might have been. But, you know, it's kind of the whole thing of what Angel was saying is that she has the taste for it now. And she's kind of losing herself in it. And I think in the thing where they get Buffy and she's sort of just given herself over to it. I think there's been maybe a little hesitance up until this point, but I think she just throws herself to the side that she chooses and she's gonna, you know, live it up on that side the best she can, because that's really the only way she knows how to live life is to live in that moment. So she's going to get whatever joy she can out of that. And if that means doing it in this really twisted, horrible way, like maybe. And I think she holds a lot of resentment and jealousy toward Buffy. Like she talks about like all of that. And I think a lot of that is coming out in that scene. You know, she's jealous of Buffy's relationship with Giles. She's jealous of Buffy's relationship with the Scoobies. We didn't even see Faith for a whole span of episodes in the middle of season 3. So she was clearly off doing other stuff. So I think she's felt very excluded and that she feels like Buffy is very kind of put on a pedestal by everybody and that she knows that, you know, but for the grace of God, go she sort of thing. Like Buffy could be just like her. Mm-hmm. For one decision. So I think there's just so much jealous and resentment that she has that is just coming out. And she, now that she is letting go, having joined this other side, she's just going to let it all loose. And it's really sad to see for me. I find that more sad than anything.
I think that's absolutely true. I think you hit on some really good points here also, because when you think about how close Buffy and Faith in Faith's mind were to switching places. And she talks a lot in this episode about how, you know, this should have been my town. This should have been my life. It's basically this whole, there's a fine line between love and hate kind of thing. You know, she wants to become Buffy. So she wants to kill Buffy. Like she wants to, you know, she loves Buffy, so she hates Buffy. There are all these conflicting emotions, and I think, like you said, like she is taking them all out, like trying to make herself feel better, trying to exercise the part of herself that's Buffy. Like all of these conflicting things are going on inside of her, and it does make you sad. Like I agree with you. I just feel really bad for her. But what do you think, Kristen?
Yeah, Faith in this episode, like she just. Yeah, she's throwing herself headfirst into what she's doing. She's not the kind of person who ever kind of half-asses anything. Like, she has always been, you know, fully involved in, you know, if she's slaying, she's slaying. You know what I mean? So it's not like Buffy where she wants to belong everywhere. Like, Faith knows where she belongs and she, you know, goes for it. So it doesn't surprise me that now that she feels excluded from Buffy and all of them, like now that she's totally on Team Mayor, mm-hmm. like I can see, you know, like I would expect nothing less from her than for her to completely choose that side and, you know, and go against the others. Like once she makes a decision like that, I don't expect her to do it another thing differently about it, you know?
Yeah. And that's funny as well when you think about like what we were saying before about the difference between having a soul and not having a soul and being good and being evil, is that it's so interesting that she's choosing to or thinks she's allying herself with Angelus, you know, who is this soulless creature. And she's basically putting herself on his level, saying now we're going to be the bad guys tearing up the town together as though they are equals, whereas one of them has a soul and one of them does not. One of them is pure evil and one of them is choosing to be evil. You know, it's a very interesting dichotomy that she's casting herself with Angelus, whereas Buffy has Angel, you know? I feel like there's so many parallels going on. It's really interesting.
Kind of the dark mirror image.
Yeah, exactly. Mitch has a point in the doc here, which is, which was the most convincing aspect? Like, what convinced you? I guess in general, like, you had no real reason to doubt that it was true because you could never figure out the reason why it wasn't. But, you know, he does some things like he punches Xander, he kicks and hurts Buffy and puts Buffy in chains, all that stuff.
Sadly, I think the thing that made me think he was truly Angelus was the making out with Faith part.
Yeah.
Like, I could see him punching Xander anyway. I could see him roughing Buffy up a little just to make it, you know, like, if they were both in on it, to make it believable. But, like, full-on, like, making out with Faith, that, yeah, I, you know, I had already bought into it from the beginning, but that kind of seals it. Like, wow, he's taking this really far.
It was really nice, too, because I believe I've heard her name, like, once, and I can't Google things on Buffy, and it really makes me upset when I don't know things like this. I think her name that you said, Selena, is Eliza Dushkush? How do you pronounce her last name?
Dushku.
I'm going to mess it up like 500 more times, so I'm so sorry, because I promise I'd be better at it if I wasn't a newbie. But Eliza did such a good job in that whole bit where she was like, I love when this happens in shows. She goes, I'm a good enough actor that you believed me for this kind of thing. And then Angel comes up and says, no, you know, Buffy's like, we're better actors. And it's nice that you can go at a different level and say, yeah, like, the characters are doing a good job of acting, but also the actors are doing a really good job at acting, so it fits really well. And it's not, it didn't feel like they were patting themselves on the back as a TV show, but it works in that level, because you can say, they had us all duped, like, from this whole setup, and it was so convincing. Yeah, when Angel is just making out with Faith, it's intense. Those actors are really into it, and if there wasn't for the whole murder part, I would have said it was hot, and I guess I still can't say it's hot, because this show is all about murder and sex melding together in a weird way. But God, like, it was such an intense episode. This episode really got me. And it's funny, too, because I remember, like, when the next episode starts, I was like, oh, okay, so this is just going to be some kind of Monster of the Week episode. But no, it kept up the intensity, still within kind of, not even like a contained aspect. Like, Buffy, I know for sure, has gotten so much better in season 3, and I am so excited to say that, because I was definitely on the edge of not even liking it ever, if it stayed like it was for seasons 1 and some parts of 2. It was very difficult to get through. It was very tough. I can get why it was revolutionary in terms of what technology presented, what story elements it did. That was cool, but it didn't tell a story that was as intriguing as
this one is. I will just say, I'll just interrupt you right there and say, I think when you've watched all of Buffy, you, if you like, aren't completely done with it, never want to look at a Slayer ever again, you need to go back and start it from the beginning, because that is one of the joys of Buffy that you don't get on first watch, is getting to see how it all ties together and how much deeper the stories are than they appear on first glance. Like, because I agree with you 100%. Like, the first season, watching it for the first time, I'll be the first to admit that there are weak points. And in season 2 as well, there were a lot of episodes when I was thinking, if I was watching this for the first time, I would think this was complete rubbish. But once you've seen it all, and as you say, like, season 3 begins to tie in some things, and you're like, oh, wow, this thing really has been building all along. So when you go back with that knowledge, you will appreciate it a lot more. Like, it's made for rewatching.
I was going to say, I have to say, Mitch, I think I'm kind of the opposite. I love season 3. I'm fully enjoying everything going on. But as I finished Earshot yesterday, I started thinking, man, I really miss some of the silly, fun Monster of the Week episodes from season 1 and 2. Like, you know, the creepy water swim team turning into lizards, and, you know, the just all of that. I really do miss a little bit of it. It was nice
you're gonna love season 4.
Well, it was nice to have a little bit of tension relieved in between storylines sometimes. Like, they had continuing storylines, but it wasn't always like one giant arc. There were episodes that were self-contained, and I just noticed that I missed a little bit of that. So, hey, you know, everybody has a different perspective.
Exactly. This is why some people love the first seasons and some people love the last seasons. You know, it's all sort of a balance about what you most enjoy. But
Caitlin,
I'm sure we're going to talk about that a lot more. What were we going
to
say?
I was going to say, to Caitlin's love of Supernatural, I'm trying to make sense of what that show is from not having really seen too much other than random episodes. If you had to compare Supernatural as a whole to any of the seasons that I've seen as far as Buffy, would you say it's more of seasons 1 and 2 or season 3 of Buffy in terms
Supernatural
of...
Supernatural changes so much, though.
So is now, it... every season, like Buffy, every season is very different.
Okay. Because I'm just wondering if I would like it depending on what season you would compare it to, but if it's so different, then it's honestly going to be hot and cold.
Yeah, no, it's a lot more different. Mm-hmm. Maybe because it goes on longer.
Yeah.
Maybe Buffy would have ended up being the same. I don't know. You would like the first couple of seasons of Supernatural. Anyway, we can talk about that on Supernatural Rewatchable, which I can't wait for. Yay!
Oh, God, no. That's like 5 years long.
That'll never happen because Supernatural's never going to end.
It's never
going to
end.
All right. But so, yeah, I mean, we have a point here that's really, really interesting, which is that Buffy is still dealing with Angela's PTSD. You know, it's and you say, you know, it's going to be a while before she can, like, really appreciate him again or really get into it. And I think that's one of the things I love most about this episode is how you can really see that Buffy isn't going to just get over what happened in season two. And neither is Angel, but especially Buffy, like what she has to go through in this episode. It isn't just like, gotcha. It's actually deeply damaging to her and bringing up all of those old fears. What did you think about that, Caitlin, as a big Angel fan?
I mean, I think it makes absolute sense because I think in a lot of ways we haven't seen them work through everything. Like, they were in secrets of, like, that he came back and then... there was the whole big drama of like him almost killing himself. And then just sort of, they kind of fell into a holding pattern of sort of trying to be how they were, but they've never really completely dealt with it. So it makes total sense that having this kind of return to that, even though Buffy asked him to do it and he agreed to do it. And so it was all according to their plan. Like, it would be very hard for her to watch. So, and it was hard for him to deal with. So it makes perfect sense to me. And I'm glad that they're not just brushing over it, because I think those issues are a lot deeper than maybe we've seen with, like, them going to a French movie and it being all about sex, oops, sort of thing. Like, that's cute and funny, but, like, there's a lot of deeper issues there that are coming to the surface, and I think it's interesting.
Agreed. And that goes again to what you were saying, Kristen, that in more than before, although I would argue not on rewatch, but definitely on this first watch, you are feeling the connection from episode to episode and from past storylines as well. They're all coming back. They're not dropping anything. They're not letting anything. They're not letting any of the big emotional stuff go. You're seeing it too with Xander and Faith. You know, with how that played out in the last couple of episodes too. Like, it's deep emotional crap that these people go through, and the audience has to live it with them. I enjoy that because I apparently like pain. So there you go. Not like Faith, but still. Mitch, I have to ask you about this next point. I wonder if we'll ever see the blue man again, a la Anya. Is that because you think the blue man is Anya?
No. When you were on the last episode, or I don't remember what superfan said this, the last Rewatchable episode, they mentioned that Anya at first did not know that she would come back. This sounds like something you would say, Selena, because you would know this. She didn't know if she would come back, but then they filmed this next Anya episode really, really close to the original one. And that's, we were talking about that because of Doppelgangland bringing back Dark Willow
again.
Oh, I was
not that.
So that's where I'm asking. I don't think that Blue Man's a fan favorite like Dark Willow and Anya, but also I think that the show tends to bring back characters like Amy or like Jonathan, even just little peppered in bits. And he felt like he had more to do. He felt like he was interesting to me in terms of he had a backstory. He was friends with Giles, like maybe in his Ripper days. Maybe that's where he'll come back. Maybe he was meant to come back.
Maybe he was meant to come back for the show.
Yeah, and that's why he was built up here. And like, we'll see him meeting his little blue wife. Maybe they're aliens. Aww. I don't know. Why are they blue? Maybe he just has a skin condition and I'm just judging him.
Well, it's I did love the character as he appeared in this episode. I thought it was a very cool little thing.
Like a ninja magician kind of deal.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
He was interesting, and funny that he was just doing like basically like a sparkler show over Angel. It looked real to me,
I know.
But that was really intelligent that he was able to just sell it and do all that language that he was doing with it. I'm sure he was.
Did you guys like
Latin.
That twist? The way they did that twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was amazing. I thought that was a really good way of playing with our emotions, and I'm now jaded, so they can't do it again. But
yeah,
the fact that they did it this time, I think, really was effective, and it was used. It was punched right at the right time in the fight. The fight being the overall arc of Buffy and Faith.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So the final point that Doc asks the mayor: do we still not know what his ultimate plan is? Do we? Do we know? I forget.
It's like fuzzy.
I don't think we know.
We know it's something to do with ascension, whatever that means.
Right. The books of ascension.
Which probably has something to do with, like, that sounds kind of biblical to me. So it could have something to do with the fallen angel Lucifer. No? Am I catching any connection there?
Well, I think you're talking about Supernatural again.
No.
I was gonna say, I'm just going to guess that the mayor wants to resurrect something or ascend to a higher plane of existence or something like that.
Well, they did.
It's so funny, like
they did bring back the master in the Wishverse. So I wonder if the fact that they brought that actor back most recently means that they signed some kind of contract deal with him that he'll show up again in the next season, and that's why he wanted to come back for that little bit. Cause it seems specific that he would come back for that, unless that actor was just like, you know, a really big fan of the show Buffy and liked his role.
Or unless they just wanted to make a cool alternate reality.
Yeah.
They do have that power.
But where I'm saying is it feels like to me it opened up the door that the Ascension could be rising the Master again, because he's been the biggest bad that we've seen so far.
Well, Faith says that she'll be at his right hand side. She's not sure if he'll have hands, though.
That's true.
But you know, it's the giant blob monster. Jabba the Hutt's coming back again.
There you go.
You know.
I hope not. I'm tired of hearing those wet noises.
I was just gonna say, like, whenever, because a lot of shows and books and movies and stuff use the term the Ascension now. Like, I don't know if you guys have noticed, it's like in everything, it's like it's the Ascension every time I think of Buffy. You know what? Every time I imagine the plot of Buffy, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. So, yet another thing, I guess.
I just can't think of too many creatures supernaturally that don't have hands. So now I'm stuck there, Caitlin. I really don't know what it's going to be. I guess I don't. I guess I'm not meant to know yet. That's good.
Yes.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a mystery still.
Cool. I like that. That's interesting, because they are not playing their cards very on the front with the mayor, and that's unlike Buffy, because usually they're very up front and center about their baddies, as far as I can remember.
I think he
should become a dragon. They don't have hands.
I agree.
Done.
They have claws, you're right.
Close dragon mayor. Oh my god.
Yeah. Dragon mayor.
And like, Faith rides on his back into battle.
Yes!
Yeah.
Like Daenerys. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Whee!
Okay, so, moving into favorite scenes. Let's see. Caitlin, what, since we were just talking about it, what is yours?
My favorite one was when, because Kristen took the best scene, is when, quote unquote, Angelus and Faith go to see the mayor, and Angel kind of scopes out his powers, like throws the letter opener at him, and he catches it through his hand, and like his face when the hand grows back, like, oh my god. Like, so I don't know. I love Angel in this scene because, you know, he's being a very convincing Angelus in this scene, and he's getting information. So when you know that he's faking, you can see that he's getting information as he's going. So I kind of love that. Once you know what he's doing in that scene, it's kind of fun to watch it again.
Definitely. I like Angel a lot in this episode, actually. He is a really good actor. He's right. And Kristen, what about you?
Mine is the scene where we find out that Angelus is not actually back. Like, I loved the... It's very, very rare that things truly surprise me. Usually I can see stuff coming, even if I don't read spoilers. So not being able to see that coming was a really, really big shock, and I quite enjoyed it. So yeah, that whole scene with Buffy and Faith and Angel in the museum where we find out that he's actually not Angelus. Ta-da, just kidding. And it was fabulous. Yeah, loved all of it.
I will never not get chills.
Yeah.
When Faith is like, you know, I'm the world's best actor, and Angel goes, second best. And then there's like everything's slow motion, and there's like these dramatic drum beats. Like, I get chills no matter how many times I watch that scene. I love it so much.
It's good stuff.
Me too. I mean, that is the best scene of the episode, hands down. Like, there's no competition. I'll just say that mine was the final scene, the one where Buffy and Angel are sort of recovering from what they did, and they're all traumatized about it. And I just love it because it's so real. And like we were talking about before, I love that they don't just let that go.
Yeah.
That it legitimately dug up old scars, and they're gonna have a hard time dealing with that.
It's very realistic. And for what the show has handled before, it brings about a new form of PTSD that we're not familiar with in Buffy, from the fact that this show usually doesn't handle so much into it. I mean, the only one I can really remember is like Willow being disturbed that she found dead students with Cordelia, but other than that, it's been pretty much like la-di-da, here we go.
I mean, Giles, like, and Kendra's Jenny dead, and Buffy and all the people that die. There's been quite a lot, but I agree with you, they're definitely amping it up now.
Yeah, because they usually get over it fairly quickly. Like, even Giles didn't have a reaction episode because they went right on to Freddy Krueger, and it was like, oh, I'm just moving on now. And I was like, no, like, Jenny just died. Hello. So it's still a rough battle watching this show and not seeing PTSD up until now.
There's been some for Giles. There's definitely been a return of Jenny and stuff, but I will agree with you that this is Buffy's struggle, and it has been Buffy's struggle since it happened with Angel. And I think, you know, it's nice that they're keeping up with that.
I mean, you're right with like how Giles was being tortured by Angelus, and then it was Drusilla's hypnotism that made him feel even more anger toward Angel later on. So I guess that's some form of PTSD. And every character will deal with it, as every human being does in their own way. I do find this, as I should just say this, it's a very interesting plot point, and it intrigues me that the characters are acting the way that they are in terms of this just being an act. So I do find that fun. But yeah, my favorite scene. It was either an anonymous capybara or anonymous hyena that changed my name and everyone else's eyes. Nardok's E's.
Well, that was me, because you spelled my name wrong, so well, I thought right. you'd like E's? To know how it
oh,
felt.
Oh, no, like Selena Gomez, didn't I? I'm so sorry.
Yes, so that's what happens when you remove the eyes from someone's name. Now you know.
I do know. I'm so sorry. That's funny. Whew. Okay. Anyways, so Meech's favorite scene was when the blue man was being so super casual with Giles, because it was cute, because they were just old friends, and you expected the blue man to be, like, I don't even know, an alien or something magical. And then he was just like, you know, it felt like he was going to be like, thanks, Giles, we'll see you at dinner on Tuesday.
Yeah. Gonna meet, like, baby Rupert, you know, their blue child or something.
I wish that we had a name for him. Do we get a name for him eventually somewhere? Is that a spoiler to say that much?
I don't know if he has a name. I'm just looking it up now. Maybe someone should look that up really quick, because that would actually be kind of funny.
The blue
maybe
man.
No, I think it was just sorcerer.
Sorcerer? That's so sad.
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah. My favorite line comes from that scene when you know, they ask, so what did you actually do? What was this big favor? And Giles just goes, I introduced him to his wife. It's like, oh, see, here's another example of this like supernatural creature that has more depth than you'd immediately assume. You know, they're doing some of that stuff now where they're like, he might be a demon or whatever, but he has a wife. It's cute, you know?
Yeah.
I like that.
And it's totally normal that Giles introduced him to her, so
yeah. Giles has had an interesting life. I still feel cheated out of that spin-off show.
Hey, never say never. Never say never. Gilmore Girls came back after 8 years of being off air. Buffy can do the same.
I mean, it's only a matter of time before we get, you know, Giles the musical. The Cursed Giles. There you go.
The Cursed Giles. That was great.
But yeah, no. If nothing else, they should do a comic book about it or something. I'm still holding on.
It's like, if you think about it, like Hollywood does have a trend of bringing back really old franchises. Like Doctor Who is a perfect example. Hello.
Yeah.
It's not. I don't think this is ever dead in the water. I mean, as for Anthony Stewart ever coming back to play Giles, he could be like old and wizened, sitting at a campfire and like saying like, "Now, kids, back in my day, like that kind of stuff." That'd be cute.
Yes.
I'd be like that if it was kind of like How I Met Your Mother format. How I Introduced the Blue Man to His Wife. Oh, that's a really long show title.
That's great.
How I Met My Slayer.
How I Met My Slayer. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay, so moving on here with the lines. Caitlin, what was your line?
So I had to go with the big Bangel line because it's my ship. So it's at the very end when Buffy asks for the break and she walks away and Angel goes, "You still my girl?" And she pauses and said, "Always." So I prefer this always to the Harry Potter always. This is my
always. Agreed. And this came first. See the pattern continues.
Oh, God, Selena.
Someone actually pointed this out to me on Twitter.
You're right, and I don't want you to be right here.
I'm right.
It's funny.
I'm so glad you're coming on this train, Mitch. You can help me look out for more parallels.
I'll admit, it's not very difficult to get me on crazy trains. Just ask Caitlin about twincest and Glee. It was pretty bad.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine comes from Wesley, and it was at the end, and he says, "Well, I, for one, protest. You pitted Slaya against Slaya in a dangerous charade that could have gotten both of them killed without informing me. I'm telling the council." Like,
I love your accent.
The way he, like, pouts as he's walking away, and he's like, "I'm telling the council," and just kind of, like, stomps off. He still is, like, 4 years old, and Giles took his toy, and it was really, really funny. So,
I'm telling!
And Mitch, yours is Wesley too, and Giles.
Yeah, I just like their little interactions. It's cute. Wesley, they're looking up information. God even knows what at this point. It didn't really matter. I just like the line that stuck out to me. Wesley goes, "Find anything," and Giles goes, "6-course banquet of nothing with a scoop of sod all as a palate closer." And it's just such a British thing to say. My God, I love it.
Yeah, that's true. That is very enjoyable.
Yeah.
So we're wrapping up Enemies now and moving into Earshot, which was another very strong episode. And I should say now that I'm very sorry to Karen that she's not on this episode, because this was pretty much the episode that she wanted to be on. So I feel like such a traitor for taking this from her. But I mean, she's away, so she can't really do it. So I just hope that we do the episode justice in the discussion. So we have a couple of things we want to get into for this episode, but I'm just going to read the synopsis first, and then we can talk about the stuff. So in this episode, Buffy gets telepathy, and Jonathan finally comes into the limelight in a horrific way. When Buffy fights some mouthless demons, one touches her, imbuing the power of telepathy onto our Slayer. At first, it's super cool, until she starts hearing Xander thinking about her boobs, and then it's all downhill from there. Buff has an overload in the cafeteria from too many voices, but is able to hear one sadistic voice threatening to kill all of the students in a day's time. With the Scoobies' investigative help, Buffy is able to stop both Jonathan before he commits suicide with a sniper rifle and the lunch lady from feeding students rat poison, all in a day's work for a sleuthing marshmallow. Oh, yes. Great comparison. So, I mean, the obvious thing that we should point out is the insane and unfortunate, awful irony of us recording this on June 12th, which is obviously, you know, we just had a horrific things happening in Orlando really for the past couple of days. And what is even more sort of, I want to say ironic, and I hope you know what I mean by that, is that when this episode Earshot originally aired, like we talked about before the recording, they actually had scheduled it to air the week after the shootings at Columbine. And they actually had to move it until, like, they kept it. I think they aired it the week before the season 4 premiere, actually. So they kept it for a long time. And it's just, it's a very sad state on society that we're here having pretty much the same conversation, you know? So I know, Mitch, you wanted to touch on this.
So they used this episode for season 4's intro. Essentially, this episode is 401, like 400.
No, almost. No, not at all. Like, you can't really do it that way. They just basically, what they did for the week this was supposed to air, they aired a repeat of Bad Girls instead. And then they basically, they were like, well, we have this episode, we have to show it. So they just found a time slot to show it, basically.
Just shut
it. So it's not like this leads into, but it's funny that actually, funny, I guess, but it's because whenever I rewatch this episode, it never really feels like part of season 3 for me.
Oh.
Like, it always feels apart. It always, when I think of this episode, I think it's a season 4 episode, which is very strange because I didn't watch this live, so I have no reason to connect it to season 4. So, yeah. Like, the only thing I can conclude is that maybe the editing is different or something. Like, I can't really figure out what it is, but it has a very distinct, separate feeling from everything else.
Well, I will admit, now that you're mentioning editing might be different, that it did feel strange, the way everything was going on with Jonathan. And I don't know if we want to just jump right headfirst into that bit, because it was weird, because it didn't... I don't know if it was an editing choice or a shooting choice, regardless. I felt like I was missing something. It didn't really make sense why it seemed to me like he might have kind of sort of been aiming that gun toward the crowd, but I still don't get from a story point why it was. I'm not very well versed in guns. It looks like something that people will call a sniper rifle to me, right? Something to that long distance, whatever. I don't get the setup. It doesn't make sense to me in terms of suicide. Sure, okay, you can say like, from whatever perspective, he's a desperate human being at this point, and if he wants to take his life, he'll do it via any means accessible to him. And this is very dark stuff, guys. Obviously, like, I think this goes without saying. This is like the most trigger warning you could ever trigger warning. But in terms of what happens, it just feels weird to me, Selena. Is that what you're referencing in terms of editing? Or, I mean, you were saying there was a different tone to the episode, but now do you see what I'm saying in terms of that part, I guess, story-wise and editing-wise, not making sense?
Well, I guess what you're pretty much saying is that it seems like a weird gun to use for the purpose he was trying to use it for. I always assumed, and again, I don't know a lot about guns, but I always assumed that this was like a hunting rifle or something, and it was just like maybe his dad had a hunting rifle at home or something like that. Like,
that was basically what I thought too, was he clearly... he's not necessarily thinking this through. He wants to kill himself, and this is the only means he has. Like, it's not like his dad has a whole host of guns at home. He sneaks the one out that he can, and that's the one that he takes. Like, I don't think he necessarily thought... It seems an odd choice for the show to make.
Yes, that's where I'm at.
But clearly they want you to think that he's the one that's going to kill everyone, but he's not. So it makes you think that because you're not seeing him with a handgun up in the balcony, you know, looking down. You're seeing him with a rifle. It makes him feel like the perpetrator of this horrible evil, which is what you're supposed to think for the episode. So, yeah, I can see both sides. Like, it definitely feels like they're leading you somewhere that it doesn't necessarily seem like a legitimate way to do it, but because he may not have had access, that's what he chose.
Exactly. Because that's the thing, is like, if you're going to do a switch out like this, you have to make it both believable in both realities. The reality where he's going to go through and do this mass murder that Buffy hears, you know, via telepathy. Or you have to make it believable that he's going to take his own life. And it was only believable on that first front. The second front, I get that we're saying he's not thinking all the way through, he's desperate. You would think that, I mean, God, this is such a dark thing to even say and go through. It's tough for me to say this, but it feels like at that point you would have thought, how can you even pull the trigger? Because that barrel seemed really far away from the trigger. So maybe he was going to have some kind of setup. I don't know. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. It didn't follow through for me, and it left a bad taste in my mouth because it felt like it was a really in poor taste bait and switch from the fact that he was dealing with such a dark and heavy topic. And of course, this is all separate from what we're talking about, you know, in terms of this having some very unfortunate timing with both Orlando and Columbine. But this is just saying, in terms of this episode, I found that it also fell in poor taste because of that. I mean, I won't say this in poor taste that we're covering it. It just kind of happened in the end of the day. So I hope that we're still paying respect to the victims of both of those very horrible events. And in terms of that, it's sad. And it's, I agree, Selena, very, very sad irony that that's happened twice now with this episode. It's depressing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. very much so. I will say, I think that the gun is a fair critique, because I've definitely thought it too, but I think the general assumption is like Kristen was saying, like it was it's a sign that he really hadn't thought it through. You know, at the end of the day, Jonathan is a scared, lonely kid, and he's like, I'm gonna get a gun and go to the clock tower and kill myself, and it's gonna be super tragic, like, you know, like that whole thing. And he's not actually, when it came time to do it, he might figure out, oh, I can't actually physically use this to, you know, it's horrible to talk about, but I guess it was meant to emphasize that his plan really wasn't thought through at all, you know, which is just adds something right. A little bit interesting to his character too. And I should mention too, actually, this is in a lot of ways like a special episode for a lot of Buffy fans, because it's like, talk about things coming together. Like you've watched Jonathan the show for 3 seasons, and suddenly he comes in and is used in this major way. And I just want to give a shout out to Jane Espenson, who is one of my favorite writers of all time, and she wrote this episode. She's written for Firefly and Dollhouse and Battlestar Galactica and Torchwood and Once Upon a Time.
And Gilmore Girls. You know. Yeah, Selena, I was so excited when I saw her name in the credits for this episode. Mm-hmm. I thought of you immediately because I know that you're a big fan of her as well. And I was thinking, like, how can you handle... So first, when this episode starts, I'm like, how can you handle telepathy well? How can you write that so it's not... so much, and she did it in a way that just made so much sense organic. Oh my gosh, she did an if anyone's interested in this writer, because you can tell her talent just watching this episode, she did do a pretty in-length interview, and she does reference Buffy quite a lot.
Oh, so don't listen to it.
No, it wasn't spoilery. I promise you, it was not spoilery, because I listened to it and I was completely fine. But she references Buffy in terms of the writing room and what it was like to write on a supernatural show, I guess. On the podcast that many hypeable people listen to by now, I'm sure, called Gilmore Guys, that Selena and I like to tune into. And it's a really nice way to see how you can get into the mindset to write such a dark episode like this, but still stay grounded. I think it's odd. Yeah. It's odd that interview came into my life close to when this episode aired too, because I was just, even if I hadn't known her name, Selena, I would have been impressed by the writing of this episode. I would have looked her up. I would have gotten to know more about her because she did such a good job. I mean, I'm not sure if it was her choice about that hunting rifle. That could have been something network defined, honestly, because that could have been, you know, like, oh, we have to use this one because this is whatever. Because that, I feel like that sounds like something that would be outside of the hands of the actual writer to choose a specific weapon, a specific gun to do that act. So I'm going to give her a big break there, because I don't think that... I mean, I'm wondering now if there's an interview out there where you could hear about this episode in particular, too.
Sure, there are. Yeah, absolutely. And actually, it's funny that, because I was just going to say with Jane Espenson that she pretty much like is responsible for Danny Strong as we know him, because this is the first episode. It's the guy who played Jonathan. It's just before he'd only had very, very small parts of the show. And when it came to giving him, to finding a character that would fit the role of the would be shooter, but actually wanted to kill himself, she was the one who suggested Jonathan. And there was like some uncertainty if this background actor could handle such a big storyline. She basically vouched for him. And then, you know, he went on to star on, I haven't seen it yet, but I know he goes on to have an arc on Gilmore Girls. He went on to write some of the Hunger Games movies. You know, he's had this amazing career, and it's basically all because of Jane Espenson. It's a pretty cool piece of Buffy trivia for you there.
And he created the show Empire, too. Yeah, no, he did, yes. Yeah, he's stayed in the limelight in a very good way after this episode. And you can tell he has... I'm not sure of like the terms of what you would say for this, but you can tell he was very well studied in terms of acting, because he does a really good job of selling someone on the edge of desperation, but at a point where they're not sure what they're doing, which is such a tough role to sell. And so does Sarah Michelle Gellar. Like, she does, oh my god, like, I know I kind of joke in the doc later that I say she's like Dr. Phil or like Veronica Mars, but that's not to say that those aren't people that you can't aspire to be in a positive light, because she does such a good job. Like, I believe that role felt more like Sarah Michelle Gellar than Buffy in a good way, because it made me feel like Sarah's personality of, you know, calm in a very horrific situation, and listening to someone, talking them through it, that was so instrumental in making this episode sell, making it work, because it's such a high concept episode. This is humongous that we're going through and talking about, you know, a fake out switch with a mass suicide and telepathy all in one. That's a lot for an audience to swallow. But those three voices, Jane Espenson and Sarah Michelle Gellar and Danny Strong, sold this so well that it orchestrated into, I think, what's so far one of my favorite episodes of Buffy. It was that good.
Well, that's good to hear. I know that Karen definitely agrees. What about you guys, Karen and Caitlin and Kristen? What did you feel about this whole thing, and maybe Jonathan in particular, since we're just talking about him?
I think this is such a good episode. It's so strong, and it's one of those episodes where we're not focusing so much on the supernatural. Buffy gets the, you know, telepathy, but the real conflict is the shooting and the potential shooting and murder. So really the core of this episode is about humans, which, you know, we focus so much on the supernatural that sometimes we forget how much conflict there are among people. And we come back to this in this episode, and, you know, we get Jonathan and then we get the lunch lady, who are, you know, both human and having these horrific issues that they're dealing with and acting out accordingly. So I find it really powerful. I find it so unfortunate that it's an episode that remains as relevant today as it was before or after Columbine. Like, it's just, it's sad to me and heartbreaking that it remains so relevant, but I find it so powerful. Everything that Buffy goes through, and I think it's an interesting thing for her to go through, to learn about other people and kind of learning the importance of privacy sort of thing going on. And I love that she has Angel, who she can't read his thoughts, which is a fun little aspect of their relationship in there as well. So I don't know. I love pretty much everything about this episode. It works so well.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Kristen?
I agree. I really did. I liked this episode. Not only was it like a little bit of a step back from the crazy overarching story that's been going on, like it kind of separates you from that for a second. I loved the stuff with Buffy and the telepathy. Like, I really liked how that all kind of snowballed and how that was literally just the instrument of the main plot and getting, you know, to find out exactly which child is doing this. And it gave the Scoobies something to do. And, you know, Buffy was kind of on the sidelines and they really had time to get their hands dirty and figure out, you know, who is plotting all of this. And yeah, it's a really good episode. I don't know if it qualifies as a favorite for me yet, but it was really, really strong. And I really, really did like it.
Good to know. I agree. I think it's great. Now we have a question in the doc that's very interesting, and turning our conversation back to Buffy having, you know, really a lot happened in this episode. I sometimes forget it's all one episode because it's so much story. So Buffy obviously gets these telepathy powers. She can hear what everyone is thinking. And Mitch asks, would you like having telepathy if you could control how many voices you could hear? Mitch, I assume you want to answer this.
And I am going to unabashedly reference Edward Cullen here, from the fact that there are definite moments where Stephanie Meyer took from Buffy. I know she did. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that she did here. I like the concepts, A, that she can't read Angel's mind because Edward can't read Bella's mind, and I always found that to be kind of intriguing as a good crux for the story. And then also, I would like it if I could, like, look at someone and tap into it more specifically. And I don't know how Twilight works, because it seems like that's what happens with Edward's powers. I like that superpower part of Twilight. I thought it was always really interesting. I would like if Buffy was able to keep the telepathy. I thought that she was able to control it eventually, which we were set up to believe she never would be. That would have been an interesting concept to keep going for the entirety of the show. That would have made me feel like Buffy is I mean, kind of like a Legend of Zelda character, like a Link growing more powerful as he defeats each dungeon. Like Buffy, as she defeats more demons, will gain more powers from them. That's like any kind of, you know, adventure game. You gain more, you like, and like whatever it is. Oh God, what's the one where you kill dragons and you get their souls? I think you play it, Selena. But you know what I mean? Like it was Dragon Age or something. Skyrim. Like this felt like a Skyrim kind of thing. Like that Buffy was killing a demon and gaining a soul or telepathy or whatever. It was fun. It was really cool. So if I could do it personally, if I could like point and click in my mind or even from far away, like could you imagine being able to think of someone like a family member really far away, this is all really creepy. But like if you needed to know if someone was safe, for instance, and you were able to hear their thoughts or if they were able to speak to you, kind of like X-Men and Jean Grey and Xavier do sometimes, like that kind of stuff seems really cool to me. I really, really liked that concept in the latest X-Men movie and all of those. And if Buffy was able to keep it, guys, could you imagine how much different of a show this would be? That'd be, they'd be writing themselves into a hole, because like you can never fool her ever again unless you're apparently a vampire. And that's tough because there are a lot of characters that, like, we've been relying on Faith and Giles to dupe Buffy. Giles with that test where he had to inject her arm, and Faith to, you know, make her think that she was good this whole time. Giles and Joyce to let her not know that they were together. Like, a lot of stuff would be ruined if Buffy was to know everything. So I feel like that's a tough point to be at. So it's really convenient that all Angel had to do was just feed her another soul from this demon or something. No one chose it as a funny line, so I wanted to talk about that. Does anyone remember what the wording of it was? It was really hilarious when it was so casual. Like Buffy was just like, "Yeah, like all I needed was for you to kill a demon and give me its soul, and then I was all good."
I think she said something like "eat his heart" or "drink his heart" or something like that. Yeah.
She was like, "We talked, and then he fed me the heart of a demon, and then we talked."
Yeah,
it was so perfect. It was just a cute. It was such a cute way to write this telepathy off, because it was such a cool power. But I know that they were kind of like, "Well, that was fun while it lasted, wasn't it, kids?"
Yeah.
I will say that after she kind of became telepathic and we figured out that it was because, you know, the demon, all that, it made me like kind of think, like, how many demons has she touched before? Like, this has never come up previous, or is this just a specific kind of demon or like class of demon? Like, it made me kind of wonder if they just kind of retconned this and were like, "Hey, this is a thing that can now happen with demons, sorry." Because, like, she's come up against quite a few and usually has had some hand-to-hand combat, and...
Well, it's only, like, there are, you know, obviously we're learning now there's a lot of different kinds of demons, you know, and they all invade Sunnydale. They all invade Sunnydale for various reasons, and I think this is just the first type we've seen that can... It can infect its host, you know?
Okay. That's kind of what I figured. But yeah, it made me think back to all of the others and be like, is there, you know, some latent ability hanging out in her that could just, like, come out at any moment? Like, it would be crazy.
Mm. Like the tail that she was worried she had.
Like the tail. Or the horns. Yeah. The goat horns.
I'm telling you guys, like, I feel like they could have done that whole video game route. That are gain powers from each demon she defeats. That could be good and bad. It starts to feel like Heroes, actually, from what Skylar was doing. What was his name?
Siler.
Yeah, and that's problematic too. That introduces a lot of interesting story elements that you're like, where's the limit?
Maybe too much.
I don't think it was retconned, actually. Kristen, because I feel like this was introduced as this specific demon has the ability to pass on its power. Maybe I just interpreted it differently, or I missed a certain line that said it was every demon could. I don't remember the exact wording to say if they actually said.
Well, I think Selena was right. Giles talks about there being a bunch of different kinds of demons, and this is one kind that can. So right. I'm sure there are others that can, but so not all can. It's
so we could see this concept come back again, which could be fun.
Maybe. So the Scoobies had a lot of thoughts that Buffy was made privy to. Do you guys, did it make sense to you? Was it in character?
Oz's thoughts were the best.
Yes.
I was partial to Cordelia's, man. I just love that exactly what she thinks is what comes out of her mouth. Like, that is so Cordelia, and I loved it. Just, yeah, it was fabulous.
Yeah, me too.
I'll be the first to say that Xander's were disgusting. And they're a very teenage boy. I was a teenage boy at one point. I can relate.
I love how freaked out he is about it, though. Like, he's, you know, he's Xander, and he's just as embarrassed by himself and his tendency to be a gross boy. So he's like, crap, Buffy's, I gotta think of other things. So, like, you know, like, he even tries not to be a gross boy sometimes.
I mean, and, Xander and Wesley were more similar than you'd think. They both had those thoughts.
But I'm kind of with Adriana. Like, I liked hearing Wesley's dirty thoughts because it was like, ooh. It's like, I agree with her. I think she said something about, like, the fact that he was more dressed up made him sexier. Because it's like, what's hiding underneath that layer? What are you not showing to the world? And now that you hear some more about him, like, checking out Cordelia, it's like, I'm fanning myself over here like, God, I really ship this.
Really?
I haven't come up with a ship name yet. No, I absolutely do. And I think it's funny they're calling her Jailbait because I think she's 17, which I don't really know.
I still think she's 18.
Is she? If she's 18.
Maybe she's, no, she must be 17. Otherwise, she wouldn't be. Yeah, she must be 17.
So I don't even think it's illegal in California. Buffy is 18.
Buffy turned 18 in.
Yeah, Buffy did.
No, wait. I'm losing track of her. Yeah, she's 18. She's turned 18.
But it's stupid that they're calling it Jailbait because, I mean, yeah, maybe it's inappropriate.
She's a student. He's a teacher. She's under 18. It makes sense.
Because, I mean, not always 18 is the age of consent in all states of America. So that's where.
I guess it is here. So you have a question, too.
That's where I was falling into the point of, like, I can ship it, and I don't know. I still haven't found my ship name. I'll think of one. I can't come up with one on the fly. Maybe Kesley. That's kind of fun. I like that. I'll go with that. Okay, go on, Selena.
So while you're thinking of that, do you guys think that Wesley and Cordelia are actually going to get together?
No comment.
Kristen.
I mean, I was getting there. I would like to say no, just because this is a TV show on network TV and, like, representing a, like, they don't seem to be presenting it in a good or a bad light at all right now. It's just like a reality, which is fine, but if they like made them a legit couple while she's still in high school, that's a little weird for me. He's not really a teacher, but it still is just kind of strange. If you know, after graduation, if they're so inclined, I guess it wouldn't be so weird, but it just, it's kind of strange.
I guess I don't find it as weird from the fact that I saw this in my own high school, and I don't know if this sounds really, like, ho-dunk of me to say, but some people looked down upon it, but I was kind of like, whatever. There was a student who was 18 that was dating, like, a substitute band teacher, and she was, like, I mean, maybe Wesley's a little bit older than her. She was, like, maybe 23, 24, but, I mean, how old are we to assume Wesley is? That could define a little bit, I mean, in terms of society, because I think sometimes that society tends to find age difference creepier than this. So maybe he's like 30, and that's where it feels a bit creepier to us. I'm not sure. I don't know that it really matters. And it's also kind of funny too, because as we were talking about in the last episode of Rewatchable, that actor is married to Allison Hannigan, and they must have met on the set, as far as I could glean from that past conversation. What's their age difference? I don't know. It's tough, because I can tell Allison Hannigan's trying to play like a younger age, because she's definitely wearing like younger clothes and whatnot, but you can tell she's a little bit older. So yeah, it's Wesley is introducing a really interesting little conundrum now, isn't he, with dating all of these Scoobies. Other than real life or in show.
Yeah, there's 8 years difference between them, so a little bit of a difference.
Between Allison Hannigan and Wesley's actor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, and in general, in terms of if they're going to get together or not, I don't know. I feel like he's going to be used more of a plot device to be like, look, now Giles, you're Watcher, yes, but Wesley had to die in the process, and Cordelia hates you for it, or something. Like, that's where I can see this going. Because I don't see him sticking around still. I think he's just, he's too auxiliary. The fact that he's interested in Cordelia makes me even more in the thought process that he's auxiliary. Because he's just a love interest at that point. He's not really, like, important.
Okay. So Buffy finally finds out in this episode that Giles and Joyce
really did get it on twice in the Band Candy. And there's a couple of funny things about this, actually. First of all, Jane Espenson wrote Band Candy. She also wrote Gingerbread, so, you know, it's a hit or miss, I guess. But, yeah, she wrote Band Candy. And this line was actually added in because fans at the time didn't realize that Giles and Joyce had really slept together. Like, apparently there was some confusion about that. And I don't know how they found out about it. I guess they wrote in hand letters or whatever that happened at that time. Posted an AOL message board. Like, how did that work?
Sent letters via, like, carrier pigeons or...
pigeons, yeah, exactly. Like, I don't even know. But,
I don't know. What do you do in those days?
So they added in that reference, and I actually thought it was one of the best parts of the episode. It might even be my favorite. Yeah, it might be my favorite quote. Maybe I'll change it out for another one. But yeah, she figures out finally they had sex, and Joyce is like all the Scoobies. That's like a sad part of this episode. No one wants to be around Buffy because she can hear what they're thinking, and Joyce is no exception.
Yeah, so it's kind of sad that we saw it off screen. I wish that we saw like Giles and Joyce share a moment when Giles was dropping, you know, Buffy back off of home, and he was like, "Hey, Joyce, so she can read minds now." Yeah. I wish we saw that, because there was an understanding.
Maybe you shouldn't think of that thing.
Because there was definitely an understanding when he comes back in the house. He's like, "I know what happened."
So we go from Buffy being... Oh, God, so much plot in this episode. So Buffy's cured of her debilitating mind-reading powers, but she's obviously... Now they have a mystery to solve. You know, now they need to figure out who is actually going to hurt the students. And while Buffy is up in the clock tower, and I know that's someone's favorite scene, so we can revisit that in favorite scenes, but while she is up dealing with Jonathan, it's actually Xander who saves the day this time again by, of all things, going into the kitchen to steal some food and having that absolutely hilarious back and forth of him with the jello and her with the rat poison, and they stare at each other for 20 seconds before he finally runs out and saves them all from the lunch lady.
I also have to say that lunch lady put up one hell of a fight with Buffy.
I know. Wow. I was thinking the same thing.
She did a stunt
woman that looked nothing like her.
Mm-hmm. No, seriously, yeah, the stunt woman was like very different. I noticed that too, Caitlin. It was bad. I was like, oh God, no, they didn't just...
What were we saying, Kristen?
Oh no, it was just really, really funny. Like, I didn't expect her to put up any sort of a battle, and Buffy had to, like, you know, it like took a minute to actually take down this lunch lady, and I was like, good for you. Like, you know, if you're gonna try and kill everyone, at least you put up a good fight at the end.
Yeah.
It was funny too, because did anyone else feel that this was maybe slightly reminiscent of that Jell-O moment in Jurassic Park?
Jell-O moment in Jurassic
Park. She holds Jell-O on her spoon, and there's like a starts jiggling, and she realizes that the dinosaurs are coming. Or no, she's holding it and it's jiggling, and it's like this nervous moment where you're just holding Jell-O and it's jiggling in your hand, and that's the tension of the moment from the fact that you're holding Jell-O.
I didn't think about that.
No, it was the first thing I thought about. I don't know which came first at this point. I feel like
Jurassic Park World was like 1993, wasn't it?
So, yeah. I don't know. It was an interesting choice to make it Jell-O in my mind. I thought there might have been a connection there.
I think it was just like a funny visual, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, it is regardless of which way you go with it. I agree.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have the Buffy talking Jonathan down from the tower, and you have one final question here. Will we see more of Jonathan? Will he become a Scooby, perhaps? Newbie, thoughts on this?
See, now I'm conflicted, because now you told me this didn't air until season 4, meaning that you weren't confused if he was to show up in the end of season 3. So, I think not.
Well, I will say this has nothing to do with... Like, its placement has nothing to do with anything, because it was a network that was like, we have to wait to air this.
So well, if anything, maybe you're just holding your cards. Maybe he does kind of come in to this final fight, and then the season 3, and you were confused initially, as was the rest of the fandom when it aired, but then it made more sense when you saw this episode in the beginning of season 4. So, maybe. I don't know. I'm still in between.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sincerely doubt that Jonathan would become a Scooby. If he does, I'd be happy, but I don't think he will. I would like to see him, continue to see him in the roles he's been playing so far. Like, see him in the background, have him pop up at parties and show, like, I'd like to still see him and, you know, see how his life progresses. So I hope we see him again.
Mm-hmm. See him at parties. I like that. He was in the party of with the zombies.
The guacamole. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just here for the dip. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. All right. So those are all our discussion points for this episode. Moving into our favorite scenes, I think we should go to Caitlin's because that's kind of the one I was skipping over before.
Yeah. So mine was just it was Buffy talking Jonathan down. I find this. The conversation, and she, because she makes a point in saying eventually, you know, I could have taken this from you at any point, but she goes out of her way to talk him down, which is not usually her regular course of action when facing a problem. But she talks about, you know, how, yeah, you've got problems. Well, so does everybody else. And nobody is paying attention to you because they're stuck with their own problems. Like,
yeah.
It's so true, but it's really sad. And there's just that really great visual where Buffy's looking out of the clock tower and Jonathan, like, drops the gun and kind of comes up to stand next to her to mm-hmm. look out the window and look at everybody below. I just find that whole thing so powerful. And I love that she goes about the whole thing in a non-violent way and is very real and honest with him. And it just shows in ways we don't always see that Buffy's so heroic in a lot of ways, not just that she is physically strong. She has these very much heroic other traits about her, and I love seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel the Veronica Mars here, Caitlin?
Well, I would say when you see Veronica Mars, did you feel the Buffy?
Yeah.
I think that's more accurate.
What about you, Kristen? Oh, I guess, wait, Mitch, you had the one right before, so we'll do still yours.
Yeah, mine's when Buffy's classmate that was in class and was really upset because Buffy was learning all that there was to know about, I think it was Hamilton. Wait, not Hamilton. God, Hamlet. That was bad. From the teacher's mind and the.
It's Othello, right?
Was it Othello? I don't know. I think Iago's in both. Iago, the character.
I think
in both.
It's Othello.
So I kept getting confused.
There was Othello. I was just trying to be nice. Yeah.
Regardless, yes. Once again, Shakespeare on Rewatchable and Buffy keeps coming up. Regardless, yeah, it was just nice to see that little character come back, and as Buffy is parkouring up onto the roof. The classmate just is like, oh, I could have done that. Like, she's always so jealous of Buffy. And now I can't help but wonder, in the nature of BTVS, if we're going to see some more of that character show up a la Jonathan, because, God, I did not expect him to come up like this. What if she's, like, the next, I don't know, evil villain that I never saw this whole time?
Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is, I couldn't choose, but I ended up, I think I'm going to go for a slightly unconventional one, which is the scene with Larry and Xander, because I love Larry. Mm. Like, he's one of my favorite auxiliary characters at this point in the show. And I just love getting to see him. And I love how they're handling his story, too, because it's so on sidelines, but he's just such a cool... You know, he really is the prototype Karofsky from Glee, but better because they never go too far with him, you know?
And he's very concerned with making sure Xander, you know, stays true to himself.
Properly.
Yeah, it's really sweet. Yeah, it is.
I wonder if it's going to come to bite Xander in the ass one day. I don't even know how it could, but just the fact that this is still going on makes me feel like, wasn't that season one when the Invisible Girl... Yeah, that was season one.
Oh, season one was Invisible Girl.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But that wasn't...
And they're holding on to that from all this time, and Larry shows up as a white hat in the Wishverse, so it's like... I feel like Larry has an important role to play here, and I don't know what it could be, because he still thinks Xander's gay, and it's interesting that they're holding on to that. I don't know where that's going to play out, if there's going to be a payoff for that, or if it's just supposed to be like a running gag or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I like it at any rate. I thought it was a great scene.
I do appreciate Larry. He's a fun mm-hmm. character to see.
He is. And Kristen, you have, once again, you have the, you know, official best scene of the episode.
I just got lucky this time. No, I really love the scene in the library where Buffy hears all the different Scooby's thoughts. It's just, it goes a long way to kind of give you another glimpse into each of their characters in a totally new way. And Oz is insanely genius, and I love his thoughts. And Willow is so concerned and special, and Xander's Xander, and Cordelia is exactly how you expect her to be. Like, it's just a really fun scene, and I loved kind of getting another glimpse into them. And Buffy kind of, you could tell she was kind of excited to get a chance to see into their heads too. And so it was like, you know, she kind of relished the moment, and then things got weird and they all left.
And obviously, like you were saying, the fact that Cordelia says exactly what she's thinking, whereas in Oz's head, there's this whole monologue going on, and outward just comes, huh?
Yeah, this existential, you know, thought process about where we all, you know, exist and why, and yeah, and all he gets out is, huh?
Yeah,
makes you wonder what else is going on in his mind during the rest of this crazy stuff.
Exactly. It is a kind of a fun insight. And then coming to our favorite quotes, and you have another really good, strong one, Caitlin.
So I'm just going with Bangel all day, because why not? But there's when Buffy gets the telepathy, she goes to see Angel to see if she can read his thoughts. And so they're sitting and talking, and Angel says, "A lot of things that seem strong and good and powerful, they can be painful." And Buffy says, "Like, say, immortality?" And Angel deadpan, "Exactly, I'm dying to get rid of that." And Buffy goes, "Funny." And Angel still deadpan, "I'm a funny guy."
It is so good. Like, the only thing for me, like, the thing that makes Angel's stoicism work so well is that they're so aware of it.
Yeah.
On the show. I love it.
I just cracked up so hard. I love it.
Mm-hmm. It is like, it's his understated ways. Like, in the episode with Doppelgangland, when he thinks Willow is dead. And he comes into the library, and he's like, "Willow's dead." And he's like, "Hi, Willow." And it's just like that way he does it. It's so Angel. It's so awkward.
That way, what? Huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, any time he has it, like, he has that one setting, and that's brood. And every time there's another emotion that's required of him, he just stumbles and falls over it. And like, I chalk that up to good acting, actually, not bad acting, because I think he does it very much on purpose. And I Agreed. Just think it makes such a good character.
Mm-hmm. He can be such an awkward duck after he spends like 100 years in like a hell verse or something. Like, he's still cool.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, what was yours?
Mine is when they're doing investigations in the school, them being the Scoobies, and the one that cracked me up the most was when Cordelia just straight up walks into a teacher's room and goes, "Hi, Mr. Beach. I was just wondering, were you planning on killing a bunch of people tomorrow? Oh, it's for the yearbook." I just straight up, like, it's very rare in a TV show that I can ever laugh, because I'm such, like, a stoic person when I'm watching even, like, a super important supernatural show. But this show has been doing this to me a lot. I think it did it to me twice in this episode. The next time that it did it was with Selena's line, actually. Or maybe even Kristen's. They both did, too. So 3 times in one episode. Mm-hmm. That's a good track record.
Okay, so I guess mine was, well, I had two, and I'm just going to say them both, because why not? So one of them was at the beginning of the episode when Buffy is looking at herself in the mirror, checking for horns, and Angel shows up behind her, and he was like, "Oh, I'm sorry about sneaking up on you or something." And she goes, "It's okay, I didn't see you, sure, so I should have known you were there." Thought that was a cute one. And then when she's confronting her mom about the Giles thing, she goes, "You had sex with Giles on the hood of a police car twice?" And I just love everything about that. That delivery was amazing. And Kristen, you have the second part of that one.
Yes, mine comes from the very end of the episode, and Giles says, "Feel up to some training?" And Buffy says, "Sure, we can work out after school. You know, if you're not too busy having sex with my mother." And then Giles runs into a tree.
Perfect.
So great. So
perfect, yeah. And I feel like too, we need to miss, just because we'll be told off if we don't, that scene when they're confronting Freddy in the guy with the newspaper, and he thinks that Oz is there to beat him up, basically, because he made a bad review of Dingoes Ate My Baby.
Yes.
So good. So many good parts of this episode. Really fun.
And then Oz reads the review and is like, that's fair.
I love Oz. Yeah. I can see why people like him as much. And I really appreciated also when we were discussing his hair color changing a lot, because that's the kind of stuff that I noticed that I didn't think anyone else was going to care about. But apparently Natalie is a Seth Green super fan, and she fulfills me when it comes to Oz conversation.
Well, that is good. So so we have some listener feedback here at the end to round out the episode. And as always, we're going to just tell you where you can contact us if you want to add any thoughts about the Buffy episodes we've discussed or the ones coming up, or what you would like us to talk about on the show. So you can email us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us, re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com. You can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And iTunes reviews. If you rate us 5 stars, then Selena will introduce you to an equally blue and mysterious wife / husband to match your blueness and or mysteriousness. Oh, yes. I will try to do that. And then one, you can save my soul one time and it'll be great. So moving into listener feedback now, we have one Twitter comment that is basically all hail Mitch. So Caitlin, why don't you take that one?
Okay. So Emmy Foss says, the Buffy faith discussion on episode 163 of Rewatchable is amazing. It just covers so many bases and Mitch has so many great observations. So take a bow, Mitch.
I'll just give another hair toss like I did before when I mentioned this one. Thank you so much, my fabulous public.
And Blaze Anderson has a short comment. He says, or she says, love Oz and Cordy's thoughts in earshot. So good. Ha ha. Yes, we agree. And Kristen, what about that third tweet?
Sure. Cassandra at Palyard, it looks like she says, I'm hoping Faith is running a long con on the mayor to bring him down. Her name is Faith, after all. Ah, interesting. I don't personally think so, but I would love it if she was.
Yeah, I feel like she's like double-crossed like 5 times, worse than Severus Snape ever has, and it would just get too convoluted if she had to do it again. Usually I'm on the boat with crack theories, but can't follow you here, Cassandra. I mean, if you're right, then wow, you really caught it early.
So, Caitlin, if you get the comment from Laura, and then Mitch, you can get the comment from Tucker afterwards.
Sure. So on Hypable, Laura says, just my thoughts on Willow and Xander. I guess I always viewed that scene as Willow breaking down over everything that happened and Xander moving on with someone who she can't stand. It was a more of release of all her emotions about Faith taking her place. Then again, Willow and Xander are one of my favorite relationships with Buffy, but we will see if that changes, I guess. Also, don't hate Faith. I admit she's a mess, but she is such an important character. I love her character path in the whole Buffyverse.
I love this comment. I agree with it 100%. Definitely Willow. It's a very full circle moment for her, I think, that breakdown. And I love that it happened. I love that the show gives her space to react that way. And our final comment?
Tucker Conley said, the stupidity of the police really is glaring in the episode Consequences. One of the minor plot holes of Buffy, for sure. Buffy is one of the best shows that I've ever seen when it comes to foreshadowing, and these episodes are no exception to that rule. I wonder if Tucker was referencing that the police being stupid is foreshadowing, or if Consequences itself had something.
I think they're unrelated.
Yeah, it felt like there was a little bit of a ampersand I was meant to see there. Yeah, but I agree that the police are really stupid in this show, and I don't know if it's a plot hole. I just feel like it's a trope, if anything, because police are dumb in supernatural shows. It's something I've seen a lot.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
That detective was definitely around for more of Buffy's murder scares than this one's, and it seems odd that never comes up.
Mm-hmm. It's strange that, like, the detective's like, I'm gonna get back to the bottom of this, and then you never see him again in another episode. Even though Giles is like, well, Faith, thanks for telling us. We'll move on from here. You know, like, everything seems to be cool. It's just weird that the resolution is that Giles knows everything and then we're good. But But then, of course, it's not good because, you know, everything else happens with Faith. She goes off to her swanky sugar daddy digs, and you know, I don't know how that ends.
Well, you know what I always thought, and obviously it's a very fair point that Tucker brings up, but I always resonate, like, felt that in my head that this is like Sunnydale. Imagine how much crap goes down every single day that these people have to deal with. Like, if this detective is like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this, and then, like, a day later, like, three murder cases drops on his desk and disappearances, and maybe he's killed, or, like, you don't know because it's on a Hellmouth, so literally things happen all the time. I feel like the fact that they let things drop and you know that they're to some extent in the mayor's pocket anyway, you know, he could have, yeah, if he was feeling like the cards were turning against Faith, he could have said something to them and told them to back off, you know? Well,
also, I find it still kind of weird that Buffy in season 2 finale was being chased around by the police for Kendra's death. I feel like that was just dropped randomly too. Like, it wasn't ever resolved and the police were just... It's strange that she went from, like, Grand Theft Auto 5-star, you know, video game character to, like, go and hiding for a bit and the police will forget about you. It literally felt like that video game from the fact that she was, like, Sunnydale's number one most wanted, and then she came back to town after, I think it was Anne, that episode, and she was just cool with everyone, and she was walking around town like nothing ever happened. That really doesn't make sense to me still. So I agree with you there, Tucker, that the police just seem to either be overwhelmed or, like, overly stupid, that they're just like, eh, we forgot about that one.
Well, I think what I just said kind of goes through for that, too, though. That,
yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that's very good. And thank you so much to all of your comments. Please keep sending them in. So we're going to end. Oh, I see you added Mitch's musings to the doc. I'm very proud and pleased and excited.
Yeah, but back by popular demand, apparently. I didn't even know that was going to be a thing until it was. But I have musings to give, I guess, on the next two episodes. So here goes nothing. Kristen, help me out here. Let's do this together. So 319 choices. See, that's where I'm kind of Kristen. I'm to the point where I'm like, this has to be Faith's choices of, does she want to stick by the mayor's loyalty after she sees what the Ascension really is? Does she want to become supernatural? Do you think it's relating to Faith here?
I think this is Mitch's musings. No. I mean, there's a lot. Choices is a very general title, yeah, so it could mean a lot of things. But you would think that it would have something to do with Faith, just with all the stuff going on. So
yeah, I can't think of too many other characters that are, like, majorly involved in having to make big life or death choices, except for Angel. What if this is the choice that leads to his spinoff? Maybe. Because leading into the next episode, he spends one last night with Buffy at their prom. And it being called the prom, I just know that there's going to be some moment, like the movie Carrie, someone's going to get blood dropped all over their head, or they're going to have a really, like, you know, kind of like the homecoming where Cordelia and Buffy had the really messed up night, and they were all dirty, and they showed up to the homecoming and lost still. Like, there's going to be something about, like, even like in season 1's finale, when Buffy was the final girl, essentially, she was in her dress to go to whatever that dance was, the summer fling, and she got drowned. It looked like a harassed drowned rat on purpose. That's what she was. So I feel like we're just going to lead up to a big finale. It's a lot of punching, a lot of blood, a lot of dirt, a lot of water, and everyone's makeup and hair will be ruined, and I'll be sad for Cordelia and Buffy and Faith and Willow, because that's just what happens when you're in a supernatural show and there's a prom. Sorry.
I am really excited to see girls running around in fancy dresses kicking ass, because that usually happens.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. I like that part. They don't like it, but we like it, because they feel bad because they got ready. You know, Buffy went. She spent a lot of money on that dress. She, like, didn't eat forever so she can afford it or something. It was strange. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Hey, the fashion's going to be fun, so we can look forward to that much at least. It's going to be really 90s. I wonder what music they're going to play. I wonder if they're going to buy the rights to anything really special. Like, I want that. Like, something really quintessential 90s. That'd be really fun.
Okay.
So, yeah, there we go. That's Mitch's musings with a special guest, Kristen.
Thank you so much for Mitch's musings. That was beautiful. And we will find out next week if they are accurate.
Okay.
So that will be exciting. So next week, it is probably going to be me again, because Karen is still traveling, but hopefully she'll be around for the season 3 finale, because I got the season 2 finale, so, like, it has to be her turn. So we're going to make sure that, or try to make sure that she's on for those at least. But we will see what happens. Until next week, my name is Selena.
Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
Not Mitch.
And I'm Kristen.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.